Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways. Thanks for finding us wherever you eat up your podcasts. Darren, I can't say consume anymore. It just doesn't make sense to me. iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, as always, the Golf News Net platform at golfnewsnet.com. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach. Happy to be here in the seaside golf capital of the world. He's Darren Bunch in Bakersfield. He's happy to be there, the home to Rio Bravo Country Club. And yes, he brings Ragsy when he plays. You can find us on social media. Hope you know that by now. Darren at Getaways Golf on Twitter and at Golf Getaways on Instagram, and me, both places, at Mitch Lawrence, L-A-U-R-A-N-C-E. Darren, special show today. Somebody that you and I are both big social media people, as most of the people that we relate to these days are. And one of the great joys of social media for me, and I know for you also, is finding people and kind of getting to know them without meeting them. But you kind of feel now like you've become part of their life because you know so much about them. And we have Christian Hafer on with us today, great golf photographer and human. And I'm excited about this episode.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a fun one. You know, you talk about not meeting people, but our paths tend to cross, it seems like, the more in this social media environment. Christian was just in Scotland, and literally the same time I was there, and it seemed like I was just one or two steps behind him the entire trip. So we're going to talk about some places, especially Western Gales, which both he and I fell in love with, if anybody's followed both of our social media. And it should be a fun conversation. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And I'm going to hit Christian up because I actually think, A, I was in the same exact spot as he was at one point, and B, another place that I think we were off by about a week, but we'll discover all that. First, before we get to Christian, as always, want to mention our great sponsor today, 2under.com, the number 2UNDR.com. Great performance underwear, ridiculously comfortable loungewear. They've got it all. Holiday time, gifts for you. Buy it for yourself, then buy it for your friends. And use the promo code GNN20 for 20% off your holiday purchase, and it is a great idea. So thanks to 2under. Let's get to Christian. In the spring of this year, I had started to follow Eric Anders Lang on Instagram. For those of you who are not familiar with Eric, you should be. And one of the most unique personalities, I'll just leave it that way. I know Christian, I could talk about it, but let's just say Eric's one of the most unique personalities in the game. I loved his stuff. He's the host of Adventures in Golf on YouTube, Scratch TV stuff, the Eric Anders Lang podcast. He's really kind of exploded, and I think will even more. But through Eric's Instagram account, I became aware of another amazing human and his passion for golf, for his family, for photography, for travel, and for fun. And Christian Hafer is now part of my daily search on Instagram, and he's got amazing posts, stories, and it always, always helps to make my day better after I find him. Hopefully, if you don't follow Christian, you will now. You can find him on Instagram at Hafer Life. That's H-A-F-E underscore life. He has a non-golf Instagram at Hafe Shoots, H-A-F-E Shoots, for his non-golf pictures. He also has a fantastic website, Christian Hafer. That's Christian the way you think it would be, H-A-F-E-R.com. And you can find photos. He's got a terrific blog on there, an online store, a lot of other things also. And I think that's basically it. A lot of ways to find him, but the Instagram is where you should start. Christian, it's I've been waiting for this for a number of months now because you are somebody that really, I'm not just saying it, I really look forward to every post you put up, every picture you put up, to your family. I feel like I know you, man. It's great to have you on Talking Golf Getaways. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. That might be the grandest of introductions I'll ever receive in my life. So I might make that into a ringtone.
Well, I mean it, and I know Darren feels the same way too. One of the things that we want to do here is introduce people to people they might not know,
Right.
And like I said, if it wasn't for the social media, I wouldn't be aware of you either. And it's a great thing. Darren, we're going to get to Christian's life in photography and kind of his background in a few minutes. But you had mentioned before about you and he this past summer kind of following in each other. Well, you followed in his footsteps, let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Christian, we talk about fun a lot on the show, but we also talk about different ways to take trips. And in a through a strange train of events, I ended up alone in Scotland. So I was taking this kind of one-man solitude trip through Scotland. And every time I checked my social media, you and Eric and the whole crew were just like one stop ahead of me, Arthur Archer, just, you know, having a blast. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Just give us your impressions of that overall trip and just the sense of camaraderie that traveling in Scotland brings out in a group.
Yeah, I mean, especially for a group of golfers, Scotland is kind of, it just sets the tone as soon as you get there. You're overwhelmed with excitement. And we had, you know, it was my first time, it was Cole's first time, Eric had been there, but it still seemed to translate to everybody how excited we were. And it was like every experience we had, and we were working and, you know, had long days, but it was like every experience you wanted to make sure you got the most out of it and tried to stay in the moment as much as possible. It just has a strange aura about it for golfers.
Well, it definitely has a soul as well that it seems like you guys really play to the golf soul in all your posts. And when you're talking about the game, there's just such a soulfulness of so many of those golf courses that that I think people who haven't been over there just don't understand.
Oh yeah. I mean, it like that, one of my favorite photos I've ever taken, and you kind of mentioned it before, was at Western Gales. And honestly, that moment for me in the dark playing Western Gales and then seeing that cross behind the flag, like that image, I knew as soon as I took it, I actually mentioned the quote, and I was like, this is the last image I'll post of the trip, because this just sums it up for me. It was just, you know, it was very spiritual. It was very life-changing. It opened my eyes to a lot of things that you only hear about. And it's something that I honestly try and figure out every day how I'm going to get back there.
Well, and it's that whole, especially, I want to talk to you because we traded some exchanges on Instagram about Western Gales, but that hole and that sign that directs you to the green there, it's got to be one of the best signs, I think, of all those. So many of those signs are just like a little circle with a little X on it, and to have this giant cross behind that green, you know, as you come over that hill and look then back toward the ocean and toward the clubhouse, is just it's a magical place. I think Western Gales is magical overall, but it's such a kind of a magical stop throughout those 18 holes.
Where it kind of came up for us was interesting, because it was kind of raining most of the rounds, and you know, we were so into, we had a bunch of people out there with us, and some people just walking and some playing, and we were playing in a group of five. A club let us go out with a member, ended up joining us, and we're having a great time, and it was just one of those experiences. And then you get out there, the light is almost completely gone, we're playing in the dark, you know, there's, you see the guy in the clubhouse, you know, tapping his toe waiting for us to get in, and you come upon it, and it really set the tone for the rest of the trip, because that was pretty early on in our trip. And that just was like, if this is that good and people are saying there's better stuff out there, then, which might be debatable after playing a lot of stuff, but it really set the tone for our trip.
It's funny that our experiences there were almost the exact opposite. I literally went off as a single, as the first person off before there was a member event. And the light was fantastic. It was probably the best photography that I shot on the entire trip. And I was just out there by myself and my lonesome, you know, there in the mornings. And you're there in the late evening. And I think it shows how in golf, the timing, the weather, all those things sometimes don't matter. That golf can be magical at almost any time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you guys kind of pick up from my post. I probably am focused a little bit more on the, I don't know if it's a spiritual aspect of golf, because I think it is a spiritual game, but it's more the it's more the fun and joy of golf and less of the challenge of it. Just because, one, I'm a terrible golfer, so it's my default to make myself feel better. Two, it's for me, it's when I look upon my life and everything, I just kind of want to have fun and enjoy it as much as I can. So going out to some of these courses, it's, you know, I've played in courses where it's 110 degrees and it's brutal, but I'm playing with some of my best friends and having a great time. And I played in, you know, wind that stings when it hits you in the face, but we're playing an eightsome and having a great time. So for me, it's like it sometimes that experience with your friends and it overtakes any negatives that people say, well, the weather was terrible, I didn't like the course or whatever. A lot of times the course falls by the wayside and it's more that experience we had.
Well, you know, what's interesting, I actually had this discussion on social media with a friend of mine this morning who lives in Kentucky. And he was saying that he went out the other day and it was Scottish weather in Kentucky. He had wind, he had rain, he had sun. He was by himself, big time wind. And the guy in the pro shop left because the weather was too bad.
Yeah.
And he was saying that it was one of the best solitary walks he's ever had. And I reiterated to him that for me, one of the best was with Darren and our photographer friend Brian Orr and Jason Deegan from Golf Advisor. And we were playing Pacific Dunes in a 70-mile-an-hour wind with hail and rain. And for us, I know for all four of us, it'll be one of the most memorable days I'll have on the planet. And Scotland gives you a lot of that. Not always 70 miles an hour, but I think the weather is a huge part of why we relate to that place so much.
Well, Christian, you would have been over there when Storm Alley hit, right?
We left just before, so we actually had probably the best. So I've been to give you an idea, I think I might be the gold goose because I've been to Seattle, I don't know, probably a dozen times and never seen rain. When we went up to Cabot, we only had perfect weather. We took our honeymoon to Ireland. We only had perfect weather. It was actually 70 degrees every day in Ireland and we saw rain for an hour. And I think Western was the only time that we saw rain on our trip in Scotland. Absolutely perfect weather.
Darren, where do we want to invite Christian?
Everywhere. We want to take him everywhere with us. But so you guys left the country and the storm hit, Storm Alley, which was a huge, I don't know if you call it a tropical storm over there, but just crazy winds. Not a ton of rain, but just a ton of wind. And I played Prestwick that day, and Mitch talking about somebody going home. They were supposed to have a competition out there. It got canceled. I still showed up. And the head professional had to consult with the captain, and they still let me go out and play. I was the only one on the golf course all day. I have some video flags blowing over. I had times where my McKenzie bag got. It was one of those just insane days, and I was trying to think. I wonder where those guys were, but you were on a flight back home. You missed all the fun.
Oh yeah, we played Prestwick in a pretty calm day, and it was still windy, and so I can't imagine. And that's not an easy course to play in the wind. I had a difficult go and pretty calm wind. So good on you for doing it.
Yeah, I think I was lucky. I don't think I broke 100. And Mitch and I obviously play with Hickory clubs, so that made it all the more challenging in the wind, but. It was definitely memorable, and you know, I can honestly say that nobody's really ever played Prestwick quite in the conditions I did, because they said it was the worst win they'd ever seen at the club. So,
wow.
before we move on to your kind of background, what are the other before we leave Scotland? Did you have other favorite? I know Western Gales was great, and they're all great, but were there a couple others that you really went, okay, this is golf heaven?
Well, you know, I think obviously the old course is without a doubt, it's just kind of an experience for golfers. If they get the opportunity to see it, even if you don't play it, just to walk it and to understand how wide it is, how much slope there is, and the contours. It's not so much slope in a traditional sense of, you know, you'll stand in the bottom of this pit and you have this giant mound that you have to somehow navigate to, and you just don't understand the contours that are on that course from TV. And I know people say that all the time, but it was really eye-opening how flat it was, but how much contour there was. And that was one of my favorite walks I've ever had. Killspindy was really, really good. No practice swings, par three, first hole. It was a really great walk. We were out there with a member and a local, and he had his dog out there. We were just having a good time. That was a great one. Penmure, is that it? It's right down the street from Carnoustie. Yeah. That was fantastic. It just, like, if I lived in that area, I would play there every day. So I don't think we played a bad course the entire time. And for me, I don't necessarily, I think most golf I play on good courses, and I play on some, you know, $10 for 18 greens fees, and I still love the golf. So my view might be a little disjointed, but I thought they were all different in their own way. They all had these really unique challenges that we just don't get in the States. And everybody was really, really nice. And even where you went, they'd hear your accent and they'd ask how you're enjoying Scotland, which I thought was something, you know, you don't get a lot of other places that go. So it was really refreshing.
Did you have one or two places that you stayed that, that were exceptional, that just stuck out in your mind?
We stayed, it all kind of blends together, because we literally were moving hotel every night. We stayed at this bed and breakfast in near Killspindy that was great. It was up on this bluff, and I wish I could remember the name of it. And you kind of overlooked, you could see down to the water and everything there. That was great. I would say probably the old Lone's Inn in Prestwick was really cool, just because you're so close to everything. And we were able to get, you know, to golf really quickly. We were there, they were doing this aerial show. And so we were chatting up with all these tourists and the pilots alike. And so it was just a really cool little environment.
I think I saw on your social media too, I was looking at the blogs from Scotland that you wrote. And this is the kind of stuff that always kills me. When you were at Prestwick, and I think it was Old Lions, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you were talking about eating across the street from where Old Tom was.
Yeah.
When you're sitting there, and that's the kind of stuff to me that, call me crazy, but when you can just type that out and realize that's where you were, if you're a golfer, that's the kind of stuff that'll stay with you forever.
We were sitting there eating in the very spot where they came up with the idea for the Open. And then the very spot where they had lunch, the first Open, they went and had lunch there. And right across the street from there is a pharmacy now, which used to be, it was Tom Morse's house when he lived there. And so you'll see it in the episode that comes up on Eric's YouTube. But we just decided we're going to go in there and ask anybody if they knew what the significance of that building was. Nobody had a clue. It had not a single person that worked there was in there, and it's a tiny little pharmacy. They had any idea that that was Old Tom's home. There was a marker out there. You would have just walked by it and not thought a single thing, but there we are standing in, you know, Old Tom's front door. And it's crazy to think about.
Did you put some graffiti? Did you sneak in some graffiti and just put Old Tom was here or something?
I didn't. I should have lifted a bottle of Advil or something and just say I stole that from Tom.
Old Tom's Advil.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's leave Scotland. We can always talk Scotland for hours, but let's leave there and just talk briefly about your kind of path. It was interesting to me to start reading about it and doing some research about it. One of the blogs, I mentioned your website, christianhafer.com, and the blogs are great because your ability to write just really simply and from your heart is what gets to me about all your work, about your photos also. But you have a section there, a blog that you wrote called Getting and Keeping Kids in Golf.
Yeah.
And I know now that's really a subject dear to you because Austin is your son, who's 8, is kind of involved now in the game. But that connects you to your father. He was the one that started you in the game. Tell us how you went from that kind of on again, off again relationship with golf to a certain point. Just kind of fill us in on the progression until you really got hooked.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like most kids whose father is a golfer, they, you know, when you're pretty young, they give you a club and once you start hitting golf balls. So, you know, the story he always tells is I would be in the backyard, he had one of his old irons cut down and I would hit golf balls over the trees into the parking lot of the church. And, you know, I didn't really golf at all up until I moved back in with my father when we were in high school. And then I started golfing a little bit more. He was a pretty good player. And then I kind of fell out of it. You know, I lived in Colorado, so snowboarding dominated my life and playing rugby and all these other things. And then I kind of came back into it as I bounced around the U.S. and I had a job. I lied and said that I knew how to build golf clubs and nobody tested me. So they gave me a job and then I figured out how to make golf clubs and got pretty good at it. And then one of the courses asked me if I wanted to come be an assistant pro for a while. So I did that, had no idea what I was doing, but my motto in life is fake it till you make it. So I did that. And all the while I kind of, you know, my ambition was to be a photographer forever. And so as I kind of traveled around, golf kind of kept coming into my life and I started taking it more and more serious. And then I think I got too serious about it. So I kind of burnt out on it and I was waking up and working in the industry and, you know, I was playing all the time and I was kind of tired of it and I wasn't getting any enjoyment out of it. So fast forward a few years later and I slowly started getting back into it as I lived in PA, moved from Oregon to PA and slowly started getting back into it. And then my wife, now we met, she comes from a pretty golf forward family. You know, we talk a lot of golf in the family. So she and I were golfing and we were playing and having fun. So I was starting to get back into it and starting to enjoy it more. Austin was starting to really get into it. And it's been really fun being able to, it's something that he and I can bond with, that it's kind of our time to go out there. I can help them, you know, practice, work on different things. So I started getting the enjoyment and over the last, you know, 2-3 years, really, it's just kind of been this very interesting evolution of the way that I perceive golf and the way that I approach it, not only in my work, but in my personal life and how I interact with golf. It's been a fun ride.
Let me, if I can, ask you about, there's a couple of things I want to touch on, one of them briefly, because I know our listeners, there's a lot of parents who struggle with how to get their kids into the game and keep them there. Just briefly, because I loved this. You found a way with Austin. One of the things you did, tell us about what you did with Pokemon cards.
Oh, okay. So
this blew me away when I read this. So great.
I might have to patent this before I tell anybody about it because it's a pretty good idea. But Austin was in a big phase of, you know, he loved Pokemon and he loved Pokemon cards. So we went and I got a big box of them, bought them. They were, you know, pretty cheap relative for Pokemon cards. And what I figured was as we were playing, you know, like any kid, his attention span is pretty short. And if it's too serious, they're not going to be into it. So I figured, well, why don't we make it a game? And, you know, obviously it's golf, so you're trying to reinforce good behavior and, you know, making putts is the end of the game. So he makes a putt, he gets a card. So we play this game called Poke Putt, where take a Pokemon card and put it in all the holes. And then the first one to make his putt gets the card. And at the end of it, whoever gets the most cards gets all the cards from that round. And we would play that. I mean, I'd have to pull him off the course to go get dinner or go home because he was just having so much fun. And what I noticed over, you know, maybe 2 or 3 times of doing it is it didn't even matter if there was a card in the hole. He just wanted to go putt and have fun. And so that's kind of my advice to a lot of guys who follow me or, you know, they're starting families or they have young kids and they're struggling with getting their kid interested and keeping them interested in golf. And a lot of people assume that golf's a boring sport, and I think it's the complete opposite. It's the way you approach it. So I tell them to use that tactic all the time with whatever they're into. It's you know, Minecraft or whatever else the kids are into these days. Wow, I sound old. Whatever your kids are into, you know, use that as some sort of reward, or it can just be, you know, ice cream, you know, whatever they want. Something that says, okay, if I go out here and I have fun and do all these things, and don't coach them, just let them hit putts. They're going to hit goofy putts and all that stuff, but that's kind of what you want them to be. They're kids, you know, they're not going to be Tiger Woods right off the bat. Just let them get a love for the game before you start teaching them all the finer points.
If you put ice cream in a hole, the way I putt, it would probably be melted by the time I made a putt and got to eat it.
No, you'd be down at the hole trying to eat the ice cream out of the hole.
That's right. I'd just skip the putting, wouldn't I?
Just throw the club away, yeah.
Christian, everybody's taking pictures nowadays. We've all got a cell phone, but not everyone is a photographer. And you were a photographer first, as I was. And I think you began in high school even, or back when you were a snowboarder. You had access to a dark room and black and white. Your pictures have a definite old school look about them. You know, just talk a little bit about photography, how you approach it when you're shooting things, when you're on a trip like the Scotland trip, or I think you guys were at Pinehurst, and kind of how it's different from kind of what everybody else does. There are some very good people out there shooting pictures with cell phones, but it's a different art, definitely, of what you do.
I had the opportunity in high school to learn film photography, and this is when still film was, you know, the weapon of choice for professionals. So we learned how to shoot and process color black and white film. We did our own prints, so we would learn how to dodge and burn a print, you know, do all that kind of stuff. And after the first year of that, because it was a 1-year curriculum, my teacher and everybody else figured this is the only thing in school that he shows up for. If there's no snow, then he has to come to school. And if he's going to come to any class, it's this. So I was able to be in an environment where they saw that, and they let me kind of go on my own, started kind of learning on my own, devouring books and trying to find as much resources as I could, and going out. Like, we lived in Vail, Colorado, so we had access to really good snowboarders, and I had friends. And so that was pretty much my focus, was shooting snowboarding. They always had to pull me off and try and go do something else. So I started doing that more and more. And my goal was, as I started growing as a both a person and as a photographer at a young age, was sort of learning about street photography and, you know, photojournalism and all those kinds of things. And that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be the, you know, stereotypical, have two cameras, be in some foreign land and, you know, shooting, you know, whatever assignment it was. And what I realized when I started kind of pursuing that was, one, the industry was changing very rapidly. Two, I didn't love a lot of the things that I would have been going to shoot. And so what's been refreshing for me with golf is I've been able to, I think my golf and my photography both feed into each other, and my love for golf and my love for photography, they've both grown and evolved over the last few years. I was predominantly shooting mostly street work before. I would do some photojournalism, some sports stuff, but most of what I concentrated my effort was just going and doing street photography, which is I think helps contribute to my look and the way that I see things, and the way that I definitely edit, and, you know, the way I try and present my photos. And so it's this kind of weird amalgamation of, you know, photojournalists and, you know, like wartime photographers and street photographers have kind of inspired my style. And I think you can see that in a lot of my work, especially my black and white stuff. And so for golf, it was funny. I took a photo at Streamsong on my cell phone, and that photo got, you know, pretty popular. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, it's a black and white photo of a caddy walking in the fog, and I don't really see that anywhere else. And then I started looking at the photography landscape in golf, and I just saw a lot of the same. And it wasn't necessarily bad, There's a lot of great photographers. I just didn't see anything that I necessarily identified with as a photographer. I didn't see a lot of people, and I'm fascinated by people. I'm fascinated by the way they play, the way they live. Just I personally love to shoot people and have them in my images as much as I can. And obviously love landscape stuff too. But so I started thinking, okay, well, maybe this is something I can do as far as like a project. And that's what it really started was, I'm just going to start shooting more golf photography because I never really did it. I always had a camera, but I never really focused on it. And it's just, like I said, it's kind of evolved with my golf over time.
And are you fully digital now, or do you still do, I mean, do you have a dark room? Do you still do some old school work?
Most of my film stuff goes out to a lab just with time and kids. It's hard to do the chemicals in the house and all that. But this year we'll be doing, I've kind of got a few projects in the works that hopefully come to fruition. One will be on a 4x5 camera, so shooting 4x5 films. And then a lot more 35mm work will be in, but I still shoot now. Predominantly what most people see will be digital, and then a few, 35mm and maybe a couple 120 stills thrown in there as I come across them and then dig them up. But most of the stuff that I shoot now is digital. And if it's anything client-based, they prefer the digital, obviously, because of, the current culture of photography. Everybody wants it now. But there's been a few that really, really have seen some of the film stuff and really like that look. So I'm pushing more of that into next year and kind of slowing down not only on my approach to photography, but my approach to Instagram and all these other things is slowing down and kind of getting back into that process of being a photographer.
I'm just curious from a technical standpoint, just as we wrap this up, when you shoot film and you get the prints back, if you want to use those, you want to convert them to digital, how do you scan them?
So I have a scanner somewhere that's collecting dust that I probably should either pull out or sell, but my lab, what they'll do is they'll process the film, and they'll take that scan, they'll scan it for me. And I use, a lab that's a really good lab that I can work with on. So if it's a certain type of film, and you'll notice they have different looks to them and there's signatures of that film and you want that color, they have a really good knack for hitting that. If it's Portra or Ektachrome or something like that, they know what that film's supposed to look like. That. So when they do the scan and they send me the scan, I don't have to do a lot of adjustments in, Lightroom. So that's kind of my workflow, is I get the scan from them and then the negative back. And the negative gets archived and then I can always scan it if I want, but they're so good about their scans. And I request a certain finish to it, so it's a little flatter, has more data in the image. So when I go into an app like Lightroom, I can finalize it. I can do the minimal adjustments to it and then get it ready for either digital consumption, or even go from there. I can do it at print, which is an interesting thing as someone who used to, make his own prints from the negative. Now you scan the negative to do a digital print, but I guess that's just where we are.
That's outstanding.
You know, what I love about this discussion is you're like our photography historian. We've never had anybody on the show. I mean, we have a great, great partner of ours. Brian Orr is a fantastic photographer. We talk photography a lot. His path has been different than yours. I love this discussion. I went to photography school before you were born, literally, for 6 months in Boston when I graduated from college. I worked for a photographer, a studio photographer in New York, before you were born. And just to hear Ektachrome, I haven't heard anybody use the word Ektachrome in 3 decades, probably.
Oh, yeah.
To me, this is unbelievable, this discussion.
For me, it's kind of the same thing. It's, shooting that kind of photography and film stuff is like the Hickory version of golf. There's something about it as a photographer, you're very process based, or at least I am. I have to go through a process in the way I, unpack my gear and pack my gear up and how I prepare for what I'm going to go shoot. And, I even still now will carry a notebook with me and I have all the details in front of me, but on film, you know, this, you used to write down, you know, maybe the settings and maybe the lighting
right.
and notes about what's on that roll. I'll still do that now because I'll get something in camera that I really like that I'm trying to remind myself, okay, here's what I did. So when I go and edit it, I know I have a reference point. And I like that slowing down, being a little bit more thoughtful and not, as we used to say in the sports world, spraying and praying and, you know, take 100 shots of the same standing at the same spot and hope that one of them works out. I would prefer to rather take one photo, get that right in camera, know that I can edit it the way that I want to and be done and move on and not, you know, not stand there and waste too much time. I really like that. And film was able to really teach me that. And there's something about film. It's so good. It just looks so much better.
Well, I think of you now, and I guarantee you, even knowing Lang and Akbar, nobody has ever called you the Henri Cartier-Bresson of golf photography.
No one has. I don't think many people in the golf world know that reference point.
But they don't, but that'll always be our kind of thing now. I'm just telling you. I will think of you that way.
I saw a photo. It's when the man's leaping off of the ladder across mm-hmm. the puddle, kind of into the unknown. And that was that when I saw that photo, I was like, that's what I want to do.
Isn't that funny?
I have no idea what that photo is, but that's what I want to do.
I could see it. Well, here's the deal. As I wrap, we're going to wrap this up now. You're going to do an emergency 9 with us also. So we'll get to find out a little more, but I did some research this morning.
Okay.
Your first post was May 11th of 2012. Your Instagram post.
You went deep.
I went all the way back, which takes a while to scroll down to that sucker. Trust me. I went back there. There have been eight, as of this morning, there may be more now, there have been 1,856 posts since then. You now have 10,300 plus followers. The first post got 4 likes. Again, this was in 2012. Got 4 likes. The first post over 100 likes was, and Darren and I both love this, a picture you took of Monterey Peninsula Golf Club, November 3rd of 2016. Mike Strands being one of our favorite humans.
Yeah, he's great.
By May of 2017, you were getting 300 likes often. Last January at Winter Park, and I believe this is where you and I were on the same grounds, because I was at that event, if it was Akbar.
Okay.
Were you there for that?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. We didn't get to say hi, but we were there. You got almost 1,000 likes on that picture. So the tide had turned. Now, maybe it's because Eric and Akbar were there.
Probably.
Because those two, you know, they have paparazzi all around them all the time. And then on November, just recently, just a few weeks ago, the video that you did from Pinehurst got almost 2,500 views.
Yeah.
So this arc of yours is on the ascendancy. Do you feel that? Do you feel kind of something big about to happen?
I mean, I don't, hopefully.
Not that you search for it. I'm just asking if you're kind of aware of it.
If that happens, and it would be great, but it's been fun. And I think a lot of times, especially people on Instagram and, you know, photographers or people who get any content, they're so wrapped up in, you know, the notifications they get on their phone and checking in that. And I got wrapped up in that as well. And, you know, working hard, how can I get more likes? And then when I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and, you know, his words were essentially, your work's too good. You don't need to worry about that. Like, your work's so good that people will find it. And I don't know if it's necessarily that it's so good. I think that it's very different in a lot of respects, but either way, I took it to heart, and I kind of stopped worrying so much about how many likes I was getting, how many followers I was getting. And I think mm-hmm. once I did that, that's where you really started seeing that arc. Now, obviously, some of the courses that I posted don't hurt. Some of the people that I know, it doesn't hurt. But for me, it's not necessarily about, you know, getting the 20,000 or 100,000 or a million followers. It's how many really cool images I can take and share with people that shows a different side of golf. Because I think that's where my knack has been, is to be able to go on these trips that look at golf a little differently, or play golf with people that maybe think about golf differently or look differently than what you would assume a golfer is. And that's really where I've gotten to. And I think that hopefully translates, that people understand that I'm half my posts, I'm telling you, are, I just, here's a photo, and then it's just an instant brain dump of wherever I am, and I'm just brain farting out, and that's the post. And I think people get that it's not too curated, that it's not, unfortunately for me, not too well thought out sometimes, but it's been good. And you know, it's been really fun to get some of the phone calls that I've received lately, and people asking for, you know, prints of this because they went on a trip with their dad and they played Dunbar, and you know, they want to print for their dad because it was such a special memory. And it's like, it's cool that people would want to take a photo I took of a golf course and present it to their dad as a kind of a memory and a symbol of that memory that they have. That to me is like, that's the coolest part of it all.
Wow. Well, that's exactly why I know I follow you and I love following you. I'm sure Darren feels the same way. And I know more people are going to get it, the heart and the soul of the game. And that's what you're all about too. And I can't thank you enough for being with us on Talking Golf Getaways. As I said, we're going to have an emergency nine with you, and I can't wait for that. You've done a lot of traveling. You got a lot to share. So those answers are going to be interesting. We'll have a lot of fun. You can find Christian and learn a lot more about his journey. Instagram at Hafe Life, H-A-F-E underscore life, or at Hafe Shoots, H-A-F-E Shoots, for his non-golf stuff. And I heartily recommend that too, because then you get to meet Lindsay, his wife, his son Austin, his beautiful new baby girl June, and Chief, his dog.
Yeah.
Darren yeah. and I are kind of partial to dogs too.
Good old Chief.
So this is all great stuff. You can also go to Christian's website, christianhafer.com. And Christian, thanks again, man. We look forward to the emergency nine, and it was really great to talk to you here.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. It was a pleasure.
I'm all excited now. I want to play. I want to play some golf with Christian just to have him shoot pictures of me and the hickories, and you know, my new Seamus bag that's coming tomorrow, and all kinds of good stuff.
You slut! You are a slut, Darren. It goes against everything Christian was just talking about. Because with you, it'll be impossible for it to be kind of just an off-the-cuff shot. You're going to be walking around hoping he's taking your picture.
I have a good ability to get the good photos of the guys who try and peacock every once in a while. They
all right, good.
Can always see me coming.
All right, now we can. All right. Well, thanks to you for listening. Couldn't do it without you. Follow us on social media. Rate us on iTunes. That helps a lot. Helps us to spread the word about the best in golf travel. Thanks again to Christian Hafer, to Darren. As always, you guys go eat some haggis. That's all I'm going to say. And keep running down the dream. So long.